Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Selling smoothies is what I do, but for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. He's a small business owner, too, so he knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
This is Orlando. This is where we believe in magic.
Welcome to Zoneheads Orlando, the podcast of the Orlando sports fan.
They try to run her over. Fouquet got it to go.
"20 Questions" with co-host Tyler Caron. I am calling this segment The Method to the Madness. Tyler, introduce yourself to the audience.
Hi, my name is Tyler, and I'm addicted to college basketball. How's that work, BK?
Hi, Tyler.
Yes, there we go. That's the response I needed. Yeah, I watch way too much college basketball during times that no one should be watching college basketball, and it makes me think that I'm better built for this time of year than anyone else, which I know is not true, BK, but we're here. This is the best time of the year.
Well, for the purposes of this segment, that is absolutely true. We are building up the aura and the mystique around Tyler Caron, color-coded spreadsheet and all. So I've got 20 questions about bracket building and this year's bracket in particular, sort of mixed and matched there. So if you are listening to this and you have not yet filled out your bracket, perfect. If you are listening to this in the middle of March Madness, you can chuckle and laugh at how wrong Tyler has been throughout. So however you're consuming this, I believe this to be entertaining to all of you. Are you ready, Tyler?
You got 20 questions. I have 20 pages of prep ready to go. Let's do it.
Let's rock out with... No, we're not going to go that far. How confident are you? Question number one. How confident are you in the bracket that you have built?
So, BK, we know that I do numerous brackets on my ESPN page. Now, the ones that I submit, those are the ones that I really ride or die by. I feel good. I've been with the brackets that I'll submit, and I think this is a good tidbit for everyone out there. The brackets that you submit to the pools, your money pools, are not the brackets that you are going for perfection on. You should have a perfect bracket in your ESPN page that you submit to ESPN, that $1 million. If it's perfect, you get it, great. That is not the smartest strategy to submitting your bracket to your pool. And I feel good about the ones. It's more chalky. You take less risk, less upsets, but you still have to sprinkle them in. I feel good about the couple of those that I'm in consideration to submit.
Okay. Yeah, that's good, solid strategy, and one that we will dive further into through the next 19 questions. How much has your bracket and spreadsheet system changed over the years? So when did this start and how much has it changed?
This really started for me, I want to say 2 years ago. I was hosting a college basketball March Madness show, and that's where I had to host an hour-long show where I had to know at least something about every team in the field of 68. So that's where my mind really turned to focus on being obsessive about brackets and each team in there. And last year was when I started the blueprint on how to make a guideline to March Madness. This year is really where I ramped it up to 10. So it's been the last couple of years where I've been a little bit too obsessive about this process.
I sense that by next year it will hit another level. But based on what I have seen with my own eyes, it looks pretty thorough. So looks like you're headed in the right direction or the wrong direction. This could be a world of madness, literally and figuratively, that you've entered yourself into. Question number three. Now that you have filled out your gut bracket and your research bracket, which do you like better?
Definitely the research bracket. My kind of method is that gut bracket is the very first one that I fill out. As soon as the brackets drop, I'm going through and I'm not really thinking, I'm just clicking. And that's where I really figure out how I feel about these teams. That's the basketball side of me. Picking these teams and these matchups. Then it's the analytical side. That's where the KenPom numbers, the standings, the rankings. Did you win the regular season? Did you win your conference tournament? That's where all of that factors in. I think BK, though, the two have collided perfectly. And so I don't know if I can say the analytical bracket or the gut bracket, because the one that meets in the middle is the best of both worlds.
So I have always been a bracket monogamous and will continue to be for this year, but you have provided me with the best argument for a secondary bracket that I've ever heard. And that is, and it's fun to do this, the second the bracket comes out, you just click, 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 click until you've got a whole bracket. I might do that. And then that won't be the one that I talk about. That will just be something that I have in the background. Like, is my gut actually smarter than my research? I like the idea of comparing the two. So I think I've already done my research, so I can't do it now. It would have to wait until next year. But it's the first time I've ever wavered on this. So credit to you for coming up with a system that makes me think.
I appreciate that. You know, sometimes mind madness at an appropriate amount you can take away, and it can be positive overall for you. But more times than not, you're obsessing about something that you're going to be just as good as everyone else who's just picking pretty colors is going to be.
Yes, I spent 4 hours on my bracket. Not exaggerating. If anything, I'm downplaying the amount of time that I spent yesterday filling out this whole thing. My wife filled hers out in 10 minutes, and chances are she'll have a better bracket than me.
Oh, yeah.
She did last year.
Absolutely.
Question number four. The Big 12 and SEC lead the pack with 8 bids in the NCAA tournament. The Big 10 has 6, as does the Mountain West. ACC with 5, Pac-12 has 4. Which conference is the most overexposed, according to the way that you view them, where they have more teams than you think they have overall quality?
I'm going to have to roll with... So the Mountain West is an easy target to go to, because historically the Mountain West has not performed. I believe it was 6 teams that they got into this bracket. So depending on how the Mountain West performs this year, you get 4 of those teams winning in the first round, which is a very real possibility. You have some in the play-in. That's where the narrative goes, okay, they deserve this. But if those teams fall flat, that's where it shifts to, this is why you don't have 6 Mountain West teams. So the Mountain West is an easy target. I'm going to go to the SEC, though. I think your top 4 teams in the SEC, most of those are contenders, that being Kentucky, Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee. But then you have some of the bottom 4 teams that made the bracket, your Mississippi States, your Texas A&Ms. They're just not on the same level as some of those top-heavy teams. So realistically, I think it's the SEC has 4 true contenders and teams that can make it far. The rest looking like pretty quick first round of upsets.
Now, question number 5, we'll piggyback off of this. How did the Big East only get 3 teams in? This is one of the best college basketball conferences in the country, and yet they only have 3 and they have the defending national champion and the number 1 overall seed. So I don't even understand how the maths in this situation.
I tell you what, so a lot of it comes down to the quad 1 and quad 2 wins. In some of these other conferences, you have more opportunities to get quality wins when you don't have a team like DePaul, who everyone has to play in the Big East, and won 0 conference games this year. So their overall net ranking is fairly low. Whereas, again, in the SEC, you can play the worst team in your conference and you're still getting a quality opponent according to the numbers. It's odd that the committee kind of did the SEC wrong. They did not stand by them. St. John's had a compelling argument as a bubble team to get in. Seton Hall is in that same category as well. Villanova just kind of ran out of fumes late, really an overtime game against Marquette away from potentially scratching the bubble. I'm not outraged by the decision. Those 3 teams that are in, UConn, Marquette, and Creighton, all quality teams, all contenders to win this year, and there is a huge dip-off from that. Again, I broke it down a couple of weeks ago. Big East is Tier 1 UConn in a field of their own. Tier 2 is Marquette and Creighton. Tier 3 is Seton Hall through really Xavier, and then you have Georgetown, DePaul on bottle. That third tier does not scratch even close to what Tier 2 does.
Yeah, and Tier 2 well represented here, Marquette and Creighton. A lot of people have them going pretty far. Question number 6. Name the one team that didn't get in that you think got the most hosed. So this will be the last snub conversation you hear, but is there a team where you looked and went, come on, how are they not in the tournament?
I mean, some of those teams that I just mentioned, you certainly have Seton Hall and St. John's are on. If you're going to list five, Providence falls into the category with the run that they had in the Big East tournament. Those teams are definitely in consideration. I'll put it this way, though, because I'm starting to shift very much into the numbers and lean into the numbers. Indiana State, I believe it was they finished the regular season in conference tournament play when Selection Sunday rolled around, ranked in KenPom 28th in the country. I believe it was. That is the highest ranked KenPom team that has not made the field of 64 come Selection Sunday, or 68 even. So I would say that Indiana State, although they're in a very small mid-major, Drake won the conference outright, they have a pretty compelling case as to why they should have at least made that play-in game.
Long live Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Unfortunately, we didn't get heard in the NCAA tournament. He was a legend that unfortunately will not be made, at least on this stage. Now, question number seven. Can you trust anyone from the West Coast Conference not named Gonzaga as you fill out your bracket?
Yeah, listen, St. Mary's, who that's the only, you know, other team in consideration here. St. Mary's won the conference this year, and watching Gonzaga in the WCC semifinals beat up on the Dons of San Francisco, I was thinking, I don't know if this team is going to be able to be stopped. And St. Mary's Gonzaga, obviously a long-living rivalry in the conference between those two. They meet just about every year in the championship. St. Mary's is a team that can compete in this tournament. Now, do I see them making it to the Sweet 16? No, absolutely not. Do I see them being able to get by Grand Canyon, who, frankly, that's their 5-12 matchup? Grand Canyon was a better team last year than they are this year. Definitely. I can take St. Mary's out of the first round. I can't take them much further, and I think the other way about Gonzaga.
I don't have either going very far in my bracket. We have 20 questions with Tyler Caron, the method to the madness here. Question number eight, and this rolls perfectly from that St. Mary's discussion. Everyone loves the classic 12 over 5. Mm-hmm. If you fill out a bracket and you don't have a 12 beating a 5, I'm not even sure you're American. Give me your favorite 12-5 upset from your bracket.
Ooh, I currently have two that I feel pretty good about, and that's UAB over San Diego State, that being in the East. And then I also, I'm going back and forth on this one, James Madison over Wisconsin in the South. Wisconsin is playing their best basketball that they have of the entire season. AJ Storr is their leading scorer. He's really starting to click and turn into that elite player, that star that can lead a team to an inspired March Madness run. James Madison, the Dukes, they could score the ball. Looking over at UAB, Eric Gaines has been one of the most exciting guards in the country if you're looking in the right places, and that being outside of the Power Five. I like what UAB was able to do in conference play this year. They have experience on their roster that hasn't quite made the run in the tournament, but still has been around in college basketball and together for a stretch of years now, which is becoming a rarity. So I think I'll go with UAB over San Diego State, despite the Aztecs making the Final Four just a year ago.
Interesting. I've got JMU beating Wisconsin, got McNeese over Gonzaga, probably one that you disagree with.
Yeah.
And that's it. You don't want to overdo it. You got to be selective with the 12 fives. Question number nine. Fair to say that we don't expect a 16 to beat a 1. It's only happened twice. It happened last year. Probably not going to happen this year. But give me the most likely 15 to upset a 2 in this year's bracket.
I tell you what. So I will be very frank. I don't love any of these 15s to upset the 2s. Now, obviously, you should. It's not something that it's happened more over the last couple of years than ever before. There's a reason that it's a 2-15 matchup. You probably shouldn't feel good about any 15s. But the teams that are able to overcome the 2 seed in the 15 spot are teams that there's one common trend. They shoot a lot of free throws. They make a lot of free throws. They don't allow their opponent to shoot a lot of free throws. It's a build that Princeton had last year when they took down Arizona. Obviously, the offensive end, you want snipers. You want shooters 1 through 5. You want everyone on the court to be an issue as soon as they cross half court. There really isn't that team this year, BK. And as much as I wanted it to be South Dakota State, granted, I have not watched a ton of South Dakota State this year, it seems like Iowa State winning the Big 12 is due for that bad loss early on in the tournament. They felt they may have been cheated out of that 4th-1 seed. They may overlook South Dakota State, but the numbers on the Jackrabbits, I believe they are, just don't necessarily back it up. So if there was one to target, I think it's that, because Iowa State's due for a loss.
Question number 10, which team fits this description best? They're either losing in the first round or they're winning the whole damn thing.
Is
there a team that fits the bill?
That team, Iowa State, is definitely one to look out for, but they don't fit the bill. I know what you're looking for here. You're looking at, as I explained, what you're looking for in those 15 seed upsets. You want guys that can score. This has John Calipari and Kentucky written all over it. If you told me right now Kentucky were to get bounced in the first round to Oakland, I'm certainly not picking it, but I'd say, okay. If you told me Kentucky went on to beat UConn in the national championship, I'd say, okay. These guys are, they're young. They have more talent than anyone in the country. And I will go on record saying that. This Kentucky team offensively is one of the most elite college basketball teams that we have seen. It's a reason why they are one of the nation's biggest scorers as a team as far as points per game. But when they're off, boy, you are not getting much on the defensive end, especially from the loaded backcourt that they have, the depth that they have. But then again, the storylines are there. Reed Sheppard has risen up draft boards this year. His father made it to the Final Four for the Wildcats. It seems, and he's a Kentucky legend, it seems that the storylines are there that Kentucky could make a big run. But again, if they're off, they might be heading home early.
Content creation can be a difficult thing to tackle, especially if you're on your own, you've got a business to worry about, and you need a helping hand. That's what AuthenticAudioPro.com is all about. You can reach out to me directly on social media at Brandon Kravitz across all platforms. I'm happy to help. Everything from commercial production to live endorsements on this very show. I'll even help you launch your own high-quality podcast that you can be proud of. Customizable packages are available to fit your business's needs. I'm ready to work with you to tell your story and to make you sound great in the process. Learn more at AuthenticAudioPro.com. Question number 11. How many upsets is too many upsets for the first round when someone's filling out a bracket? So we're back to bracket psychology here. How many upsets is too many for specifically round one? And I guess the second part of this is, does the 10, at what point does it count as an upset? And I'm not talking about point spreads. I'm right. Strictly talking about seed matchups. Do you have to have the 11 over the 6? Is a 10-7 an upset?
10-7 qualifies as an upset. I think that most people that would determine these things, as long as there's more of a seed of a difference. So we're not talking about a 9 beating an 8 in the first round. We're not talking about down the line, the Elite 8, if a 2 overcomes a 1 in the region. Those aren't considered major upsets, but if it's a 1 and a 3 in the Elite 8, absolutely, book it. As long as there's 2 seeds separating the 2, you can classify it as an upset. On average, BK, the average upsets per tournament is a little over 8. It's about 8.5 upsets per tournament. Again, we've seen a spike in that over the last couple of seasons. In the first round, you're really looking for 4 to 5. Second round, you're looking at about 3. And then from beyond there, you might want to fill in 1 to stay on par with your average. But 5 a little too low, 11 a little too high. You want to try to hit 8.
I think the toughest thing for me, and this happens more so when I'm filling out the paper bracket for whatever reason, I think because you can see the whole board better, that's why I like to start with the paper bracket, is I'll be selecting, oh, okay, that looks like a good upset. I'll pick the upset, pick an upset. All of a sudden, I get to the other side of my bracket and I go, I've got too many upsets.
Right.
And now I limit the upsets on the other side. So I do... I like to have a certain number in mind so that I can kind of slow myself down because you get so overzealous but picking the upsets. But you can't, you know that if you go too crazy with that, you've got no chance in actually succeeding. Number 12, how many Cinderellas is too many Cinderellas to push to the Sweet 16? I have three. I'm curious what your number would be. And I'm assuming that would mean like a double-digit seed is the Cinderella.
Yeah, I think most times you have to have – it has to be the double-digit to really push it to that Cinderella type of status. I'll say this as far as you don't need to, more than two. Again, we're not going for perfection with every bracket that you're filling out. Sometimes you're playing defense by going chalk, and that's the smart strategy when you're every sports bet you make, you're not going for that plus 500 on the money line for the big payout. No, you're going to go with the minus 115, the minus 110, more of the 50-50 odds. Maybe even if you need a win, you're going to take the heavy favorite. And that's smart betting right there. This is smart picking. You can't get on a Cinderella frenzy. You can't let the storylines consume you that much about how awesome this could potentially be. If you do, that's where you start to slide down your bracket pools, and ultimately you eliminate yourself in the first weekend of March Madness. So you can let two slide through, but really, if you need to let a double-digit seed slide to the Sweet 16, I think you only push one through.
Question number 13. We got the East, the West, the South, and the Midwest. For you, which region was the toughest to sift your way through?
Ooh, that is, so I'll say this. The East is the most talented region of them all. And that's where it was difficult but easy at the same time, because UConn is in a category of their own right now. Big East champions, Big East regular season champions. When they're playing their best basketball, they are the best team in the country, and that's why they are the odds-on favorite to win it all. So the East was difficult in the fact of it's the most difficult 2-3-4 seed. The committee did not do justice to those teams, with Iowa State in the 2, Illinois in the 3, and Auburn in the 4. All of those teams are ranked top 10 in KenPom currently. So it's difficult in that aspect, but easy to pick the winner of UConn. I'm going to go with the Midwest. I think there's a lot of question mark teams in the Midwest in the earlier rounds. The 2 seed in Tennessee, we've seen them be great. Dalton Kinect has potential. I think it just came out today. He was All-American first team. He is a star, and Tennessee doesn't go as he does, but it's the supporting cast that can be spotty with Tennessee. Texas, super intriguing, a very talented backcourt. Max Asemus, the hero of Oral Roberts a couple years ago, still hanging around as a Longhorn. They have talent, but very wishy-washy. Kansas, we have no idea what the status of their team is going to be. Kansas is the 4 in this region. Is Kevin McCullough going to play? Is he going to be 100%? Is Hunter Dickinson going to play? Is he going to be 100%? It makes it very difficult to fill out the bracket. You also have the story of Will Wade and McNeese here at the 5-12 with a Gonzaga who's made 8 straight Sweet 16s. They're meeting in the first round. What are we supposed to do with a McNeese team who's only lost 3 games this season, has a historical college basketball coach, and Gonzaga, who does not miss the Sweet 16 year in, year out? So definitely the Midwest, the most difficult to pick.
Question number 14. Should people be taking a second look at St. Peter's after what the Peacocks did in the tournament in 2022? They made it all the way to the Elite Eight. If they draw Tennessee in that first round, and Tennessee, as you just mentioned, is a load to deal with, and they have one of the best players in the country in Dalton Kinect. But when I saw St. Peter's hit the bracket, I went, wait a minute. Should I be taking this seriously?
I'm going to give you a no on the Peacocks. They only score 65 points per game this year. We just discussed it. With a long shot, underdog, Cinderella story like that to get out of the first round, you want a team that can score the rock. Generally, you're looking for a team that's averaging at least a good 72 points per game in their conference that doesn't hold a ton of competition. So the benefit on St. Peter's side has been their defense. They only allow 63 points a game. You have to factor in the level of difficulty and competitiveness in the conference. It could just be lackluster offense is the reason the defense is tracks so well numerically. But no, they're not going to be able to get through the Vols. It's not the same St. Peter's team. Don't fall in love with previous Cinderellas. It'll bite you.
Yeah, that I think a lot of people are going to be taking this Cinderella to the ball, and they might end up disappointed. Question number 15, along those same lines, Princeton last year was a tournament darling. This year it's Yale in the Ivy League. Can Yale be this year's Princeton? Yale plays Auburn in the first round.
Yeah, I'm going to go with no. Auburn is definitely a team as well, as I mentioned with Iowa State, a team that qualifies as getting too hot just a little too early, winning the SEC, and playing some of their best basketball, Auburn, that is. So they could be due for an early loss in the bracket. I can't give it to Yale. Again, this is a team that does score the ball. This team has the potential. With they average 75 points a game. They give up less than 70. Generally, those are good numbers to create that kind of upset. The SEC, again, Auburn in the top four of the SEC, I think is going to be a whiplash for this Yale Bulldogs team, who's been playing Dartmouth all year long. And I watched a lot of Ivy League basketball this year. I was partying with the Smarties on my Friday night. Don't get me wrong. I respect the Ivy League and what they're doing up there. But this Yale team hardly won the Ivy League championship. It was a close contest. I don't see them getting over Auburn.
All right, let's rapid fire the rest of these. Okay. Question 16, which state of Florida team makes it the furthest? You got FAU. They take on Northwestern in round one. And then Stetson gets UConn. I don't think they're cracking through. Or Florida, who gets the winner, Boise State and Colorado, and then will likely have to take on Marquette in the round of 32. So who makes it the furthest between FAU, Stetson, and Florida?
BK, what if I tell you whichever team plays last and is last new, officially eliminated from the first round of March Madness? I don't know if any of these teams are making it to the round of 32. Florida would be 100% my darling pick here, and far and away, that's going to be one of the best first four games that we see. Boise State and Colorado going at it. Again, one of those Mountain West teams against a Pac-12 team. Colorado has a lot of talent. They can score the ball. They have an NBA prospect in Cody Williams. They kind of have what you need to make a run in the tournament. Boise, very explosive on offense. They have a coach-son player-coach duo. Again, the fascinating storyline there. Florida loses their big man in the SEC championship to Auburn. That's a lot of pieces to try to pick up in a short amount of time. I don't think any of them get out of the first round. But if there's one that does, it's the Owls.
Question number 17. Purdue is always ripe for disappointment. If they can get past round one, which they should be able to this year, they get Utah State or TCU. Any read on which one of these would be more likely to knock them off in round two?
If I had to pick between the two, I'm going to go with TCU. TCU is they're more fit, I think, to play a team that is constructed like Purdue, and that's where what conference you come from does matter. Now, Utah State, the outright winner of the regular season, of that Mountain West that I've been hyping up all along, but when it comes to beating a team like Purdue, who is in that top tier of number one seeds, you need the experience. You need to have been bruised up for 30 regular season games all year long. That's something that TCU is going to have a slight advantage over Utah State as. I don't see either of them having the power to overpower Purdue.
Question number 18. Who's the best player in the tournament before it starts?
I think it's, I think it's very difficult to look away from RJ Davis of North Carolina with the numbers that he has been putting up. Obviously they fell flat in the ACC tournament, ACC championship, that is, against NC State. I mentioned Dalton Knecht of Tennessee. He has been hit or miss. Zach Edey is the most consistent player. Jamal Shedd against for Houston he blanked in the conference championship against Iowa State. That's been the weird thing about these top players, BK, and some of these top teams. Generally, you're looking for a team that has had that bad loss in their conference tournament as a favorite to win the national championship. It kind of resets their hunger. You look at these top players on the top teams, most of them lost unless you're named UConn. So it's a very difficult thing to pick, but I think RJ Davis is kind of the most spectacular player in college basketball currently.
Question number 19. Who will become the star throughout the tournament? The likes of Marquise Noel from last year. The kind of guy that you might like that you think could be one of those tournament darlings.
Oh, man. I'm trying to think. I mean, again, Marquise Noel, so unique because of the size that he has. I'll tell you what. I will go with... I'm going to take someone from Oregon, who Oregon has been hot, beating Arizona in the Pac-12 championship, and their point guard, and I want to, his last, I'm blanking on what the last name is here, Shelshed. I've watched Oregon so much this year, and I'm blanking on their point guard, but he is Peyton Pritchard.
Jackson Shellstad?
Yes, thank you, Jackson. I was going to say, yes, that is who it is, Shellstad, and he is Peyton Pritchard 2.0. We remember Peyton Pritchard and what he was able to do for the Ducks. He was a four-year guy. Shellstead is a senior for a freshman, that is, for Oregon this year. Close ties to Pritchard. Went to the same high school as Pritchard. Was matching his scoring records for that high school. Kind of under the radar, as most Pac-12 teams are until they hit the tournament. I think that Shellstead, with how he's able to control the game, he scores, he assists, he is the quarterback of that offense. If the Ducks make a run, it's going to be Shellstead that really rises to the top of everyone's attention.
Question number 20, finishing 20 questions with Tyler Caron, the method to the madness. No NCAA tournament winners west of Texas since 1997.
Ooh.
Will that change this year? So not only am I asking you who wins, but I'm also asking you to do a bit of geography.
Well, my top two right now, my top three, that is UConn, who I'm not an expert, but I know that UConn and Connecticut a little bit more east than what Texas is. So I'm going to have to say Houston would be my other contender. So
yeah, Houston wouldn't be west of Texas, though.
Okay, so it needs to be outside the state of Texas. I needed the verbiage again. So, yes, I will say yes. There is a good chance because Arizona is my number one winner. The Final Four will be in Phoenix this year.
Go.
And how Arizona is set up, where they're going to play their games, they're going to have the luxury of not having to leave the Pacific time zone, or at least leave the West Coast on their rise to the March Madness tournament. Things like that do matter. And I think Arizona not having to adjust and jump through time zones at different stages and already being a West Coast team as is, I think that gives them an advantage. They have a good shot of winning it all.
20 questions with Tyler Caron, the method to the madness. Good job, Sweet Tea.
Thanks, BK.
Today's episode of the Zoneheads Orlando podcast brought to you by Authentic Audio Productions, your go-to source for audio production of any kind. Commercials, live endorsements, podcast production, we can make it sound this good. Let Authentic Audio be your guide. Go to the website, get a feel for what we offer, AuthenticAudioPro.com. Follow this show, keep up on Facebook, become a certified Zonehead by joining our group page there. Also found on Instagram and YouTube, daily content that is filtered out just for all of you. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. Continue to let the internet know that we're out here. Follow, rate, review. We greatly appreciate it. Tomorrow, The Underreported gets brought to the light via correspondent Greg Rhodes. Chat soon, Zoneheads.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.